Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it! Touchdown! Bengals! Dalton in the shotgun. Two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone! Touchdown! Bengals! And Reedy burst up the middle of the field. Look out! Reedy's off to the races.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I'm Paul Daner Jr. here with you after our much anticipated and well-received Katy Perry podcast last week. We are back here with the latest edition. Joe Reedy with me, of course, Bengals beat writer. How are we doing?
Doing good, Paul. And you know, people have wondered, you know, people have actually come up to the street and asked me, Joe, after the successful Katy Perry podcast, what are the general feelings? What can we do for an encore? And after the game, after people asking us about our sanity, after people listening to Dave Lapham's call, there's only one way to describe it.
Brittany will tell you.
Yep.
Crazy!
You know, it's like, the problem is this, is that I feel like we're going to be cast into this awful tween corner, just because we went back to the well, and we brought Brittany out here, and she, you know, it made me laugh, and I feel like that's what we're kind of going for, and I don't want people to think that we're just shoving female pop singers down their throats, but for right now, that's kind of what we did. But it's about the theme. It's about the theme, because this is the Crazy Podcast.
Crazy.
Because it has to emulate the absurd game that we saw on Sunday. And I don't know, Joe, you've seen a lot of football, cover a lot of football. I have too. Where does that rank amongst the craziest games that you've ever seen live?
On pure talent? And not just on circumstances or fluke. Well, I mean, there were some fluke things that happened. Mm-hmm. Probably second. That UK-Louisville game in 07 was pretty wild. And then the next day was Browns-Bengals up in Cleveland. It was wild, too. That's probably the wildest weekend of football I've ever seen, but this one, just with the twists and turns and everything. I mean, I wrote about it during the weekend. Crazy stuff happens in this rivalry, and this one might have topped it all on Sunday.
when you the last thing you think is that you can top drunken fan running on the field, stealing the ball from Brett Favre, or any of the other crazy experiences. We saw it, 8 turnovers in this game, including 4 in 9 plays by the Bengals early in the game to take a 14-point lead, which turned into 30 unanswered for Green Bay.
But, Paul, Bengals roared to a 14-0 lead.
They did roar, but I refuse to take your cue and bring your. I knew you were going to try and do this. I have made a declaration that we are done playing Roar by Katy Perry. We did it. We made our point. It was over. And you know what happened? Because after the podcast last week, what happened was the masses came out and spoke, and it was gone. So the Bengals decided to take it away because of the massive backlash. I'd like to think that we were part of the groundswell. We weren't the reason it happened. We were part of the groundswell. And for that, we have to bring back something that happened earlier this year when the boycott occurred and got things done. Because, Joe Reedy, this podcast is where the people rise up. Power to the people. We've made things happen. But I am not going to play Katy Perry Roar anymore because that is where I'm taking a stand. We'll play Britney Spears. So I guess, you take what you get. But
so let's see. Media boycott. Mm-hmm. This. We go to Cleveland on Sunday where supposedly I campaign for better food.
Yeah.
At Brown's now First Energy Stadium. This is like a trifecta of revolution for me this year.
Go to the window, Joe. It's time to pay out. Hit the trifecta. Well, but before we get too far off tangent, because we never do that here, let's try to get back to this game a little bit. So we mentioned the turnovers, the flip of Bengals up 14, down 16, come back to win. First time it's ever happened.
They roared back and scored the last 20 points.
We're not going there. They came back to score the last 20 points and win by 4. The first team to win a game giving up 30 unanswered since Dallas in 1999.
Which I asked Zim about that because he was an assistant mm-hmm. with the Cowboys, and Zim said he didn't remember it.
Yeah, they see quite a few games. It's probably hard to put few together. I don't think they'll be forgetting this one for a long time. I'll tell you what, though. If you're trying to pinpoint most insane crazy moment from this game, you would have to start with 4th-and-1 and a Marvin replay challenge.
So here's the situation.
One of the greatest beginnings by any referee to discuss an issue. Here's the situation, as we heard after the replay challenge. So Marvin comes back, wins the replay challenge to force in the 4th-and-1, and of course, Michael Johnson gets his helmet on the ball. Reggie Nelson picks it up. He fumbles. Terrence Newman picks it up, and he is off to the races and jumps up into the face. You talk about crazy. That is crazy, and that only means that we need to play more crazy music. Let's go with crazy music number 2, a little Queen. I like Queen. We kind of got our manhood back a little bit there.
And that's early Queen, too. So.
Oh, yeah. Powerful Queen. So, yes. So the Newman play, that whole play, I know you and I were next to each other in the press box, and we instantly said we need Jim Ross to be making the call of this game.
Oh, my God, King. God is my witness. He split him in half.
He killed him. He killed him.
Vince, no.
That's the only way you could possibly recall Jim Ross in the house with this. But so Bengals win. These are the games that this team would never win in the past.
We saw week 6 in Cleveland last year. The last time they had 4 turnovers and a half. They were leading 14-13 going into the fourth, lose 34-24. They collapsed in that game, plain and simple. And this was kind of, 4 turnovers. Even Zim kind of said that his defense was a little winded after those 2 third quarter drives. Offense gave them their second wind, and after that they were fine, which considering they were on the field nearly 11 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Unreal.
Including Bengals offense had it the last minute 20. So you got to consider for 11 of the first 13, 14 minutes, that defense was out there. It's like, Terrence, congratulations, you scored. Bad news. Get your butt out there. Now you got to go Now you got to go stop them, which I do think with the fact that Bengals were up four, you had to force the Packers to drive down the field and score a touchdown, which we have seen before and opponents have done it. So I think huge victory for the offense, huge victory for the defense, special teams,
yeah.
But, you know, it's a victory this team needed.
Yeah, that's where I kind of come away looking at this game. You know, the instant reflection is this is a game this team, this franchise has not won, not against a good team. Not when you do those things to beat yourself, you can't beat a good team. And this franchise has never been able to win those types of games. To beat a truly upper echelon team, when you make a ton of mistakes, a ton of mistakes, I think does speak. And Andrew Whitworth talked a lot about this afterwards. I wrote about this in the paper for Monday's post-game edition. It feels like this is the time they start winning those games. This is what good teams, great teams do, you should say. Great teams beat other great teams even when they don't play well because they have the character to overcome it, the talent to overcome it, and they seem to have hit that perfect intersection here. My question to you then would be, is this game bigger than just a win, because this felt a bit more like a watershed breakthrough type of win that helped this team realize and see before their eyes all that had been talked about over the offseason.
2009, week three, all over again.
Yeah.
Bengals down 11 to Pittsburgh, rallied a win in the last minute, helped propel them to a division title. Could this be the same? We'll see. But it feels like that. It feels in a span of 6 days, when you can beat a Pittsburgh, when you can beat a Green Bay, tide starts turning a little bit. And, I mean, first time since 05 they won their first two home games, which to me is pretty huge and significant too.
And to do it in this fashion, and I thought on top of all that, you really – I heard you before the game talking with Ken Brew on the radio as I was driving in, and he asked you about a bit of a groundswell of the city starting to get behind this team. There was a small one, I thought, before the Green Bay game. Afterwards, it's got to be a tidal wave at this point.
You've got to hope, because I think during halftime, you follow the Twitter stream.
Oh.
I followed a Twitter stream. The Seas were angry.
They were.
The Seas were angry, but it was amazing just having TweetDeck up after that Terrence Newman touchdown.
The flux capacitor hit 88 miles per hour and everything exploded.
Yes.
Hashtag Bengals was on fire. I mean, if that wasn't trending nationally, I don't know what was at that point.
Yeah, it's like TweetDeck just went tilt. It like stopped for 5 to 10 seconds when the referee was talking, and then it just
went off.
Yeah.
But you know what that was? You know what Beyonce would say that was? She'd say that's crazy. Get a little Jay-Z and Bebe in there, you know? Keep up with what we've been doing.
The
female pop singers.
Well, the Live at the Barclays Center. That was a couple of my friends who live in New York said that was a heck of a show.
I'm sure it was.
Little H to the Izzo.
Yeah. I mean, I would be in for some Jay-Z. Jay-Z, I really like Jay-Z when Fish would play. They would play these shows that every year they play New Year's Eve shows run down in New York. And Jay-Z has come on a couple of times and come on and done 99 Problems and a few other with Fish. That dude, he's a renaissance man.
Jay-Z and Pearl Jam in Philly last year.
Yes.
Was great. And actually, Paul, I did try to get my Kentucky license plate 99 PRBS.
How'd that turn out for you? Did you lock that up?
Somebody
else in Kentucky has 99 PRBS?
I think they do.
There's a lot of PRBS in Kentucky, apparently.
Yes.
Well, I wish you would have got it. Which, by the way, you mentioned Pearl Jam, only a couple weeks away from the trip to Buffalo, where Pearl Jam plays on that Saturday night at the Rogers Center. For all of you people that are making the trip to Buffalo,
have fun with that. I'll be at.
I know you'll be hockey in it.
At the Air Canada Center for Leafs Oilers.
Oh,
hockey night in Canada.
Yes, both of us hitting home runs on that Buffalo trip.
Yep.
I want to get to something right now. You guys sat down in Mike Zimmer's office. We're recording this on Monday night. In Monday afternoon, you guys talked with him at length. 29 minutes you guys were in there talking to him about a little bit of everything, and he was typical Zim, fantastic. He would not a lot of audible shrugs in this one. I mean, really being very honest and insightful. I want to bring – we would cut it down – to make it a little bit more digestible for you guys. But here's Mike Zimmer talking about everything Bengals defense.
Yeah. Rogers is about as frustrated as I've ever seen him.
It's good for him.
You in his head.
He actually, during the game, I was surprised. He looked over. I didn't even know he knew who I was. He looked over at me during the game, and there was a timeout. He's looking at me. This is in the first half. He's looking at me, and I kind of went like this to him. And he went, did something. And so he still kept looking. And I, you know, like, hey, I respect you. And he goes, you know, like that. So it was kind of funny.
First time you've ever had a quarterback or somebody do that to
you? No, actually, Mark Brunell, one time we were playing, and it was on Thanksgiving Day, and he came over, and he ran on our sideline. Said, hey, Mike, how you doing? I was like... I thought, man.
Wait, what did Rogers do yesterday? I'm sorry, I missed it.
Oh, there was a timeout or something. He was just kind of staring at me, and I was looking at my sheet, and he, and so I just kind of nodded at him, and he kind of went like this or something. And I gave him the thumbs up, and he gave me the salute. Yeah, so it's kind of funny.
That's worth $1 million right there.
Just, I mean, you were basically down to three healthy basically three cornerbacks. Yeah, I mean, they did a hell of a job for you.
They did a great job, yeah. They, you know, our corners played really well, and our line played well. And, you know, anytime you get guys, when you're covering good and you're rushing good, it helps a bunch. And our guys did a good job of... understanding, you know, a lot of their tendencies and a lot of their things, how we had to play things this week, and so.
You guys are definitely in condition. You had 81 snaps.
We hit a little low there right after the first half. It was the first time we had come out after halftime and gone back on the field. We had a drive right before the half. And we were on defense, and then halftime, and then we came back out, which is the first time all, even in the preseason, I believe. And it was a long drive, and we were gassed at the end. I mean, I've never seen us that gassed before. And then we kind of caught our second wind, I think, after the offense scored the touchdown there. Considering the first week, against Chicago, when they were kind of no huddling us, you know, that little caught us a little off guard. I thought we adapted to that good this week. I got the calls in quick, and the guys made, you know, communicated it good, and we did much better that way too.
Seemed like they were trying to do that more from, like, if they convert on third down, first down, when they go NASCAR kind
of. There was a couple times when they get down and, you know, after an earned first, we knew going in after an earned first down they'd get on the ball and run a couple different plays that they practice all the time, and they did catch us a couple. You know, actually there was one play that they had like three guys move and should have been called back, but they caught us. You know, once I think guy wasn't, you know, once wasn't lined up real good, but. You know, that was the way it goes.
You know, they don't do a whole lot. It's not a laundry list of plays. They do like 20 things really well, don't they? Aren't they that kind of offense? It's not like they're like, you know, rocket scientist offense, right?
No, they do what they do, and they do it really well. you know, the yards after catch. They have strong receivers. All the receivers are strong. Cobb's really strong. The receivers block well. Jordy Nelson, you know, Jones is a thick guy that, you know, so they all, you know, it probably helped us a little bit when Finley got hurt a little bit, you know, but
did that take away, was he a factor in their pass protection on the edge, Finley? Did he do a little chipping? No.
No, he never chipped.
What about Dunlap specifically? Just with Gathers out, he was going to have to play a lot more snaps, and he did, and he was good at the end of the game.
Yeah, he was good at the end of the game, and actually, so was Michael. And you know, I think we caught our second one. We were a little gassed there for a while, but you know, I think when the game is on the line, our guys kind of feel like they can, and they know it's probably going to be throws most of the time. You know, it's a little more fun for them than. And sitting in there and playing the run all day.
Kind of shows you a little bit about Dunlap, I guess, how far he's come, that he can, you know, stand up in a heavyweight fight like that and be there at the end, be in shape, and that'd be encouraging for you.
Yeah.
I mean, first three games it's had to been encouraging with Carlos, because he's been really every training camp injured, and he's gotten off to that slow start, but it seems like when the bell rang, he's been there.
Yeah, he's played well.
You know, this team's playing Geno any different this year?
He's getting a lot more help. I mean, they're helping him a lot more. You know, the center's going to him quite a bit, and you know, he's still getting some one-on-ones too. So, and he's getting, you know, he's not sacking a quarterback like I'm hoping he will, but he's getting good pressure.
I think he's playing
fine. Does good.
Does he seem frustrated by that, or does he almost welcome it to kind of free up the other guys?
No, I don't think he welcomes it. Gino's a very unselfish player. He wants to do good for what he has to do for the team, and so he's not like that.
He didn't look like they gave their tackles much help.
No, they didn't. But they typically don't.
Yeah, you knew they weren't going to run. I mean, right. That was their day to shine, man.
Yeah, we. I mean, we kind of knew that going in the ball game. That, you know, we knew that we, and I knew going in the ball game that we were going to give up more rushing yards than we probably should, based on some of the ways we were playing the game. So I wasn't going to worry about. You know, they got a 6-yard run here or there. You know, that the emphasis was stopping the passing game the best we could and getting pressure on the quarterback.
Franklin was he came in due to injury, but he seemed to be a totally different change of pace guy for
him. Yeah, they ran a little different play that we hadn't worked on. And but like I say, we were focusing on, you know, rushing the quarterback quite a bit, and I told one of the coaches, I said, I'm not playing this game scared. You know, we're going to go in and we're going to pressure them, and you know, we had a good idea about what their pass protection was going to be and how we could, you know, get some pressure on them, and if they hit a couple runs, then they hit a couple runs. But you know, we're just going to keep trying to make
short fields really good, red zone pretty damn good with that offense. I mean, proud of that.
Yeah, we played great in the red zone. We played good on third downs. We played good in the red zone. You know, we covered well all day. Really, we covered well all day. And, you know, and for the most part, we didn't let the quarterback out. You know, he got out one time on a boot that we didn't get lined up totally right. And then there was one time he scrambled. We were running a game and we didn't get out to contain him. That's a touchdown. And I think there was one other one. You know, we were concerned about that in the ball game because he's terrific when he gets out of the pocket.
Was it a suck it up day for some guys?
Yeah, we sucked it up. We sucked it up a lot. I was proud of that. We sucked it up. We there was a time in the ball game we could have folded, and we didn't do that. So I was proud of that. I was proud of you know, they accepted. I mean, it's a challenge for them. You know, I know we end up giving up 400 yards, but which is way too many. But we accepted the challenge, and we competed like crazy. So if you do that, you know, and you play smart, and you know, we didn't do. You know, we gave up the 55-yard run, and You know, he held the ball one time and hit the ball over the middle for about 25 or something. But I don't recall, you know, a whole bunch of just wide open guys and stuff like that. I mean, we competed good.
You had to earn it, man. Yeah,
we competed good.
What was your biggest takeaway from that, Joe?
The fact that Aaron Rodgers gave him a little salute during the second quarter and said, "Go, I didn't even think he knew who I was," and that interplay. But also, I mean, Paul, they were a nickel and dime for all but one snap.
Yeah,
and the thing that just stunned me was they still rolled with three corners. And Taylor Mays on that last drive, basically playing the slot corner. Taylor Mays has become a linebacker, even though Marvin doesn't say he's a linebacker.
Yeah.
He's played a little bit of slot corner. I mean, all of a sudden, Taylor Mays is becoming, and I know I'm dating and aging myself, the defensive version of Jim Jensen.
So are you saying Taylor Mays has played well?
I'm saying Taylor played well that last drive. He didn't have any breakdowns. Mm-hmm. I thought linebacker for a week and a half played well against Chicago. He's played well on special teams. I mean, he got down there in no time on that kick and recovered it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's played a ton of special teams the past couple of years. He's doing what you need to do. Now, for a guy who was a second-round pick, would you expect him to be doing more at this point? Yes, but, I mean, he's doing a heck of a lot more as a second-round pick than a former second-round pick here who's languishing in Minnesota right now.
And I think many people across the league have been outspoken of not understanding how Taylor Mays has been able to stick on here. But he has kind of found a niche for himself, and in even people who were his opponents have to say, hey, he seemed to have found himself a little bit for now.
Yeah, for now. But will that be the rest of the season? I don't know.
We'll see.
Yeah, does he improve? He may have to become like Jeremy Miles now. Jeremy was claimed on waivers by the Ravens, where he might have to become that special team stalwart right now.
Did that just backfire on the Bengals?
No, I mean, these things happen.
I mean, they obviously knew what the risk they were putting out there by putting him on waivers. But it seemed like a thing where they wanted to keep trying to bring him back, and they thought they could sort of play with fire after it worked the first time. But they got burnt.
Got burnt last year with Armon Benz.
Yeah. You know, a guy, Jeremy Miles was a special teams ace, and they hoped he was going to be back in a couple weeks, but now he'll be on a...
It's up to Vinny Ray. It's up to Cedric Pierman. Might be up to Taylor Mays now. Sean Williams becomes a little more important on teams.
Orson Charles played 18 snaps on teams, obviously, after a week after being inactive, so maybe he slowly working his way back into good graces. Ryan Whalen, on the flip side of that, back on the inactive because of the penalties that he saw on special teams. Darren Simmons trying to find people that are going to go out there and not commit penalties at this point and not have missed assignments, because it's been the biggest bugaboo for him at this point.
Yeah, which you wouldn't think for an experienced special teams unit, which I think frustrates him the most.
Without doubt. Let's move down the defense a little bit more to some more of the things that Zim talked about, and I think we got to start with one of the biggest questions on Twitter afterwards has been, because Michael Johnson has played out of this world defensive end, he's been one of the best defensive ends in football at this point, the questions are now showing up to you of, we got to find a way to re-sign Michael Johnson. But this goes further back.
This goes back to July, and I've cited it two other times, which... Let's have our friend of the program, Tina Turner, explain.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome! It happens here, and it finishes here. Two men enter, one man leaves.
Two men enter, one man leaves. Two men enter, one man leaves.
is. This is a perfect intro because we got to bring back your contract Thunderdome. What is contract Thunderdome, Joe?
Two players and agents enter. One contract's lowered. First one to take it has the deal. And, I mean, Paul, it doesn't... We had contract Thunderdome in March between Josh Brown and Mike Nugent, where people kept asking, darn it, how come Josh Brown didn't re-sign? I got the same offer as Nugent. Agent didn't take it. Nuge is back. It happened in Pittsburgh last year. Steelers wanted to re-sign Mike Wallace. They also offered the same type deal to Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown took it. Mike Wallace now goes, earns more money with Miami. These things happen. And in this situation, A.J. Green's going to get the mega deal eventually. Andy Dalton, you got to figure out, which we all think, that he'll get paid too. You can't keep everyone, and it's a business, and people... I wish nothing but the best for Michael Johnson.
No.
If there's a chance he could re-sign here, so be it. I just don't see it if he has another monster year. He'll be free agent number one. And on that, well, this will be a third contract for him off the $11.175 million tag. And people are like, well, can't you tag him again? Not for $13 million.
No.
Because it goes up the rule of 120%. So I don't see that happening. Hope he has a great year. Great guy. Hope he gets anything that's coming to him, because you've heard me say a couple of times, Paul, this is a business not only for teams but for players. And if players can earn their maximum value in that second contract, which makes their families for life and stuff, then so be it, because in the end, it's about financial security for them too.
And in the short term, it's working out great for both sides right now, because Michael Johnson is playing his face off and was one of the biggest reasons that the defense was able to slow down the Packers on Sunday, because of that line, Johnson, Dunlap, in particular, really collapsing the edges, which brings up another question, and that being, Geno Atkins has one tackle through three games.
And one sack.
One sack. Why is that? And I think people are wondering, is it just seeing different looks? Is it constant double teams? Is there more attention paid on him now? I mean, what is happening? How much is that where maybe Michael Johnson and Carlos Dunlap's effectiveness has been the direct result of the extra attention paid to Geno?
Exactly.
I mean, because they're constantly out there in one-on-ones with no help coming or even being thought of coming out there, and that's why they've been able to dominate.
Right. And I mean, on the NFL stat crew sheets, it's one tackle, which I think we got to take a look at the Bengals coaching staff, because they have their stats too, where it'll say on an NFL stat sheet after we get it, such and such has 10 tackles, and then the next day, oh, we got 24 for him. What?
Yes.
It's one of those where, I mean, he's seeing, instead of just one guard, now he's seeing a guard and center, or a guard and tackle. People are chipping to him. But that's freeing up Dunlap. That's freeing up Michael Johnson. That's freeing up Domantas Pecco.
Yeah, he's just had a really strong first couple games.
Yes, which thank goodness on a couple of these sacks, because we were scared, because after Domantas did gangman style last year,
yes,
there were a few of us who were scared that he was going to twerk or something. And
we couldn't handle a Domi twerk.
No, we liked Domantas, but if he started twerking... If anybody's ever seen a scene out of Warlock where the old man's eyes started bleeding, that might have happened. That might have happened to a few of us. But and Domantas, if you're listening to the podcast, please, no ideas. Players get off to slow starts. I think he'll be fine. It's just work through it, improve. He might be putting some pressure on himself too with the new contract and everything, but when sacks come, they come in bunches, and we've seen that. I mean, Carlos Dunlap's second year after 9.5 sacks. Those first 4 or 5 games, people were taking the hell away from him. So.
And that goes down as one of the best non-big sack seasons of all time because he had more pressures than almost any defensive end. I mean, it far and away more than any defensive end, but all the sacks were getting pushed to everybody else and he wasn't able to finish for whatever reason. You can affect games in different ways. We've talked before about the sack being an overrated stat, where it's more about the combined pressures that you put on the quarterback, and because a lot of times the guy who gets the most pressure won't be the one getting the sack stat, especially with a group like this where you have 4 guys who all worked so well together.
Right.
So I don't think anybody's pushing the panic button on Geno Atkins just yet. I think they'd like to see more production. Mike Zimmer would like to see more production, but that doesn't mean that anybody's worried that it's not going to happen. Certainly not within the walls of Paul Brown Stadium right now.
Right. It'll work itself out, and you know, things will happen. But which going on to defensive issue number 3.
Yeah. You know, you touched on it a little bit earlier. Talking about James Harris, about the nickel and the dime, how much they're playing of that, and James Harrison only playing 5 snaps. A lot of people wondering, why is James Harrison not playing more? What is he on our team for if he's not going to play? But this is circumstantial. I mean, when they play Green Bay, when they play the way Pittsburgh spread it out so much, the way New England will in a couple of weeks – he's not,
and maybe Detroit a little bit with right. Calvin Johnson and those guys.
Yeah, they spread it out and throw it a little bit more. When you see much more of the 3-4 wides and the back out of the backfield going, when you see all of that, you're just not going to see as much base. You're from any team across the league, and when the Bengals aren't in a whole lot of base, James Harrison isn't going to play a whole lot until he gets more comfortable going down a defensive end.
Now, yeah, and Zim kind of said they threw in different blitz packages last week. James wasn't as comfortable with those. Zim feels like he will as things get along and stuff. Because he's also still learning a 4-3. And as much as he says he's getting it, which I think to a certain extent he is, he's still, for the most part, still learning something that he hasn't played in a very, very long time. If ever, maybe. So it's one of those things he's still working through it.
You know what he probably thinks it is? Thinks not playing is? James will tell you.
Pain in the AASS.
We haven't brought back pain in the AA in a while. I'm always happy to bring that one back. So I don't think any reason really to worry about James Harrison at this point either. When you play a lot of teams that play more in base, run the ball more, you're going to see plenty of him. He will definitely be a big part of this defense going forward. They're going to find ways to use him.
Oh, definitely.
There's no doubt about that. And not really an issue, but I wanted to talk a little bit about Terrence Newman because...
Which speaking of Terrence Newman, because we haven't played anything in a while, Terrence being up there, 35 and stuff, kind of a mellow guy. We need a crazy mellow song. You know what we need, Paul? I think a little Seal.
But we're never gonna survive unless we get a little crazy. No, we're never gonna survive unless
you're on Scrap Session Rock, Light Rock 98.7.
98.7. To add to our crazy mix, a little light rock from Seal. But, you know, it's interesting because he had the biggest play this game where Dan Horde and Dave Lapham had a fun experience in the radio booth for this play. And if you haven't heard it yet, you're in luck because we're going to play this for you. The radio call from Terrence Newman's run back is – epic. If only there were video in the booth to see what Dave...
We needed one of those Hard Knocks coaches booth cameras.
Yes. This was a classic Lapham moment where he channeled Ric Flair in a big way. And I don't know what else was going on in that booth, but it was fantastic. And Dan Horde just kept driving right through the smoke, just trucking through it and getting the call.
It was
done.
Like Cole Trickle and Days of Thunder.
Just drive through it. Here was
drive through it, Cole. Drive through it.
Here was the radio call from Terrence Newman's 58-yard fumble return for a touchdown from our man Dave Lapham and Dan Horde.
Rodgers has it, gives to Franklin.
He dives.
I don't think he got it. I don't think he got it. The ball is out. The Bengals have scooped it up. Terrence Newman running back to the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown. Will it stand? Terrence Newman takes it back nearly 70 yards. Franklin dove, trying to pick up the yard on fourth and one. The ball squirted out. Newman comes up with it, takes it back, and for the time being, the scoreboard shows 33-30 Cincinnati.
You know, Paul, as I described it, it was a cross between a Dave Lapham mating call and Ric Flair, which...
I don't want to think about. I don't want to think about that. But that was just such a fun, moment, and it's been making its way nationally quite a bit, which was fun to see that happen on Monday.
Unbridled enthusiasm.
Unbridled. We talked about Terrence Newman. He had a really revealing post game press conference. We hadn't really heard from him like this since he'd been here, talking about how everything went leaving Dallas and how Mike Zimmer was the guy that believed him along with Mike Brown and what it has meant to him, those guys believing in him and him being able to really kind of resurrect his career a little bit, one that everybody sort of assumed was on the scrap heap when he left Dallas. We want to bring you some of what Newman had to say in his post-game press conference, talking about his relationship with Mike Zimmer and some of the things that went on during the game.
I saw quarterback was under center and the back was, you know, right behind him. So I was thinking, you know, quarterback sneak. And the way our D-line had been playing, you know, I knew it was going to be up to those guys to, you know, push the O-line back and stop Rodgers. So next thing I know, I saw somebody get hit. I saw the ball pop out, and I saw Reggie, you know, pick it up. And, you know, I was trying to get a block, and then somebody was, you know, trying to tackle him. So I was just screaming, pitch it, pitch it. And next thing I know, which nobody on defense ever yells at, but I saw the ball pop loose, and it just took a nice little bounce where I could just kind of grab it on the run. And I think Vontez is behind me. I felt somebody pushing on my back, you know. So I just looked over to my left, and I saw Leon get a great block on Jordy Nelson. And, you know, I just tried to open it up and get to the end zone.
You didn't look up at the big screen to see who was chasing you?
No. You know what? It's crazy. Playing in Dallas for so long, you never can look up at the big screen when they got the new Jumbotron. So I didn't even look at the big screen. I don't know what was going on. I was just, you know, looking over my shoulder, and then I realized that I was in the clear. You know, thanks to a block by Leon and somebody else behind me. So, you know, it was pretty much smooth sailing after that.
You look explain a 35-year-old cornerback being able to play in this match.
It starts with a guy believing in you, you know. I mean, I wouldn't be here if Mr. Brown and Coach Zim didn't believe in me, you know. And Zim, you know, just brought me in and got me doing the things that I knew I could do, and he knew that I could do, and honestly, I'm just grateful for that.
Talk about feeling your age a little bit. What concessions do you have to make to keep playing?
You know, I just take better care of my body. I remember, you know, first couple years in the league, I'd be one of the first guys out of the building, and now I'm one of the last guys out. It's usually me and Taylor here, getting in the cold tub and getting in there for 24 minutes every day. Just taking better care of my body and understanding, you know, that's my job and this is what I have to do to keep playing.
I'm not sure what the other players around the league did, but, you know, for a 35-year-old cast away, I mean, you may end up being the AFC Defensive Player of the Week for getting an interception as well and the game winning touchdown in essence.
The biggest thing for me is wins. You know, there was a lot of people that doubted me, you know, and I think for a while I bought into that, and I kind of doubted myself. And it took me talking to Zim. You know, funny thing is, I remember when I came here on my visit, he told me that I played like horse manure, you know, the last year, and I couldn't say anything, but yeah, you're right. I had no technique. All of that went out the window, and from day one, he just stayed on me, you know, and that's kind of what every player needs, and that's why, you know, the guys on this team play so well, is because he doesn't look at you as, as, you know, this great player. He looks at you as, hey, you're good right now, you can be great, and he challenges us to be great.
Really, in the end, with March, your decision to come back here was basically
Tim.
Thank you to Zim.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to go someplace else when, you know, you started to do things like you've done them earlier in your career. And like I said, I knew he was going to stay on me all day, every day. And he's going to cuss me out and, you know, challenge me. But, you know, if it wasn't for him, I'd be someplace else. I'm not going to lie to you, but I know that I'll play the best football under him. So that's where it, you know, boiled down to. And not to mention that we had some unfinished business, lost to Houston last year. So, you know, we have to start setting our goals higher and believing in that, you know. And I think this is a good step, you know, in that direction.
On the fumble return, as the ball's going on the ground, any inner debate at all about just pouncing on it instead of scooping it?
Well, I knew I could secure the ball, and I was thinking that I'd probably get tackled from behind because I didn't know what was going on behind me. But because the ball took a proper bounce, it kind of bounced up a little bit, it was easier for me to grab it and just go forward. I mean, it would be hard for me to fumble, I think, because I secured it. So once I got it, you know, I felt somebody on my back. At first, I thought it was one of their guys, you know, trying to pull me down from the jersey. Then I realized it was one of my teammates. I think it was Montez. You know, he just put his hand on my back, kind of to let me know I was back there. All I had to do was run straight. And then I looked over, like I said, to my left and saw Leon Block, Jordy Nelson. And it was, you know, just being at the right place at the right time, I guess.
Well, what made you jump in a stands, Terrence?
I don't know. I think I had one of those crazy moments where I thought I was 25 again and not 35. I just saw the fans going crazy, you know, and I just said, hey, I'm going to jump up there and have some fun with them.
Did they say anything? Did
you
say
anything? No, they were just patting me on the back. I mean, it was pretty stupid by me. But
you were up there for a while.
I got
afraid
little,
you were going to get back down?
Well, it wouldn't let me go for a second. You know, I was like, all right, you got any food or anything? Over there?
Which Terrence actually said in early April when he re-signed here that Oakland did offer him a bit more money, but he felt some unfinished business with Zim. And when you look at early in Newman's career, Dallas had a nice little playoff run, fell short a couple times. Year after Zim left is, 06 or last year, they were favored to go to the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and just fell short. And
yeah.
I think he kind of feels that at 35, this could be the best shot to go. And I mean, you remember during training camp, I was getting questions. Well, Dre should be starting. No, mm-hmm. Dre's got to earn it because Newman had a solid year last year.
He played very well last year. Really underrated than very few people were talking
Extremely
about.
Extremely underrated.
Played. Yeah.
When have we, since he's been here, done a doggone it, why did Newman do that? We don't.
Yeah.
He's just been quiet, steady, dependable. The only loud thing about him has been those pink soccer shoes that he wore during... during Hard Knocks and everything.
Exactly. You know, he's been absolutely solid and great to hear stories like this. It's just cool when so often you see the old veteran just so quickly discarded and left to go, while the young kid shows up and takes his place and struggles. It's cool to see that veteran playing so well and sort of not letting the fact that he's 35 be a part of the equation anymore, and just going out there and producing.
They'll take it easy this week, though, in practice.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure everybody in the secondary will, because they cannot afford another injury back there. The way
yeah, Leon
playing.
Hall, hamstring pull, something to watch. Adam Jones.
Fought through one last week and played, had a gutty performance.
But also the off-field incident now.
Yep.
That is something that we'll monitor, especially considering in 2 weeks there's a trial for the June case that mm-hmm. we'll wait and see on that one.
Trey still nursing a hamstring. Brandon G., they're hopeful maybe be able to come back from his concussion.
Didn't ask Acumar for the weather forecast on that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, concussions are tricky, so.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there. But Curtis Marsh is here. I mean, you know it's – you know
Chris Lewis Harris is on the roster, and if they went six corners, Chris Lewis Harris would have been the sixth corner.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we met with all the uncertainty in the secondary, I think Curtis Marsh and Chris Lewis Harris will be sticking around on the roster, certainly at least for another week until they figure out what's going on there.
I mean, the thing that still stuns me, Paul, is that – they rolled with three corners the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
As dinged up as they were, Terrence Newman at 35 every snap. Adam Jones with the abdominal injury all but one snap. Leon Hall was on pace to play every snap until the hamstring pull
mm-hmm.
that Acumar 5000 has as partly cloudy going into Cleveland. Accuready Doppler 10,000. Maybe
first
mostly
fast
sunny.
Accurate.
Yes. Traffic and weather on the eights, including cases of people put on carts.
Yes, absolutely. Well,
which, if you listen to Monday's press conference, the Reedy Lewis interplay, as usual,
always
making for must-see radio.
It always does. So this week, obviously, Bengals go to Cleveland.
My favorite trip of the year.
Favorite trip of the year. You get a little hometown taste. It'll be interesting to see what happens up there. It certainly cannot live up to the craziness that we saw in this game against Green Bay. Make sure you keep it locked to Cincinnati.com, to the blog.
Don't forget, Tuesday night.
Tuesday night, 7 o'clock at the Moorline Lager House. It will be Cincinnati.com Sports Beyond the Stripes with Paul Dougherty. Presented by JosephAuto.com.
Special guest this week, the biggest stoke in Margus Hunt.
Margus Hunt will be in the house, and we're gonna. It should be a fun, should be another fun atmosphere. So you know, come down if you get the chance. And of course, that's every single Tuesday at 7 o'clock. We'll be doing that all season long. So come down, have a few pops, say hello to me and Reedy, amongst everybody else. But yeah, so we'll have all the coverage of everything Cleveland week. This week up on the blog, and next week, who knows? Who knows where we'll be going with this podcast? But I don't want it to continue to be us just giving you the female pop stars of the tween demographic.
Well, we got to go one direction now.
I mean, no, we don't. Not that we would flip over to the Mavs. We're not going to go with a Bieber One
okay,
Direction
okay,
combo.
Thank you.
I'm just saying, and for future reference, we don't want it to continue to be that. We have. I feel like you can trust me. I put the foot down that Roar does not show back up again this week. We made that happen.
But you know, Paul, Brittany is going to do a run in Vegas, which. When I go out there in February, I'm actually thinking of going to see Brittany's show in Vegas.
On that note, there's only really one way we can go out the way we started it. Thank you for listening to the Crazy Podcast, and we will be back at you next Tuesday.
Have a good night, everybody.